government sees no need to raise the COVID alert level in Metro Manila for now. Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergara joins us later to discuss developments on the battle against the pandemic. Partial lockdowns and massive testing in the Chinese city of Tianjin following the detection of local Omicron cases. COMELEC decision on the Ferdinand Marcos Jr. disqualification cases could come out next week. And we'll discuss the new COMELEC rule on online propaganda with veteran campaign strategist Alan Herman. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, Malacañang still not keen on placing Metro Manila under COVID alert level 4, despite the rapid rise in cases. Acting presidential spokesperson Carlo Nograles says the National Capital Region has not yet hit all three of government's metrics for elevating restrictions.
For us to declare an area as alert level 4, dapat mataas ang two-week growth rate, no, high. Ang ADR is also high. Mm-mm. But total bed utilization should also be high. Mm-mm. As of the moment, ang Metro Manila, nasa moderate pa tayo. But immediately, pag tumama po yan, we will not hesitate to declare alert level 4.
But Nograles says they're now planning to change the way the hospital occupancy rate is measured, taking into consideration the available manpower.
We're also seeing many healthcare workers getting isolated because nagka-mild or asymptomatic COVID or going into quarantine. So hindi lang siya dapat tingnan yung physical beds available in hospitals, but also looking at how many healthcare workers are available. So that will now become our equivalent of a functional bed capacity. So we're also monitoring that.
The Philippines recorded over 28,000 new cases Sunday, the country's highest ever daily tally. The positivity rate also rose to an all-time high of 44%. The Philippines is expected to reach the 3 million mark in total COVID cases in the coming days. Big business groups in the Philippines hope a shift to alert level 4 will be avoided as more companies take steps to ensure the safety of their workers. Our very own Warren de Guzman joins us on the line now for more on this. Warren, what else can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. Good afternoon. Newly re-elected Philippine Chamber of Commerce and Industry President George Barcelon shares businesses are on their own stopping work to help slow the latest surge in COVID-19 cases. He couldn't share how many PCCI members are doing this, but he says it is definitely something the entire organization is looking into. And on top of this, Barcelon notes companies have also increased their own testing. And so far, he says the information gathered has been encouraging. He noted that in production in particular, some of their members have opted to stop work for 3 to 4 days, and some have opted to cancel the whole week of work. He says they are taking it one day at a time, and PCCI is actually quite happy that their members are very conscious of safety, and it is top of mind at this time. Regarding the data gathered in terms of testing, he noted that what they found was there has been an increase in numbers of people infected, but they are mostly asymptomatic with not even any flu-like symptoms. And for those who have, he noted they have mild symptoms. And they also noted in their data collection that employees treated will be cleared of their cases in 4 to 5 days. And Barcelon says this is one reason why they are cautiously optimistic that even though the number of new cases is high, he believes these are treatable and should subside in a short period. Meanwhile, the Management Association of the Philippines, President Fred Pascual, says a return to tighter mobility restrictions would definitely be a setback for the economic recovery, and he believes now is not yet the time for such measures. In a statement sent to ABS-CBN, he said, and I quote, "The exponential increase in COVID-19 cases is unfortunate. Should mobility restrictions increase once more, it will be a setback for our country's economic recovery and cause undue hardship for the business sector and the workers who could lose their jobs. We note that despite the large number of cases, we have not reached the threshold for moving to higher alert levels, particularly healthcare utilization. Further, in general, businesses have become accustomed to the precautions required for safe operation in a pandemic, and perhaps it is time for us to learn to live with the virus as what other countries are doing. To assist this, the government should ensure that the vaccination campaign continues at a rapid pace and continue to build up our healthcare capacity. All of us should also do our part by adhering strictly to health protocols." Again, that was Fred Pascual, the new president of NAP. Both BCCI and NAP believe businesses are taking their own steps to ensure safety, so they should be allowed to do so moving forward. Banks and government offices have also announced shorter office hours this week in response to the spike in COVID cases, which has been attributed to the Omicron COVID-19 variant, and the current alert level 3 status over NCR Plus is scheduled to expire on January 15th, or the end of this week. Over the weekend, the presidential advisor for entrepreneurship, Joey Concepcion, also talked about the possibility of tighter mobility restrictions amid the surge in cases, and he said, "The first quarter is historically a slow one in terms of business, as consumers tend to spend less after Christmas and New Year gatherings." So he argues that even without higher alert levels, mobility will drop naturally. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Warren de Guzman, they're joining us on the line. Appreciate that report, Warren. You take care and keep safe. The Philippine General Hospital now limiting its admission of non-COVID patients as it grapples with the latest surge. As of Sunday, the hospital only has 49 free beds left in their COVID ward, while their intensive care unit was already full.
"We will only take real emergencies. Tinigil muna po ang pag-admit sa mga elective cases para bumaba yung non-COVID, and then now you can import or reassign some of the non-COVID personnel back to the COVID operations."
PGH is also low on manpower after more than 300 of its medical staff tested positive for COVID. Other health workers were also forced to isolate after being tagged as close contacts. To keep the hospital's operations going, PGH has allowed virus-exposed workers to skip quarantine if they are asymptomatic. This directive has angered several groups.
"Nakakalungkot po ano at nakakagalit itong ginawa ng Department of Health na issuance nila, kasi tao din kami, mga health workers, hindi kami, pare-pares po tayo lahat at hindi kami immortal. Pwede ka pang makahawa kasi hindi naman guarantee na pag-asymptomatic ka, automatic, hindi ka na makakahawa."
"Ang mas matimbang po sa amin ay yung makapagbigay ng service sa mga pasyente at hindi tumigil ang operasyon ng ospital. Sa ngayon po ay nasa crisis po tayo eh."
Well, the Philippine Health Department earlier said the quarantine of vaccinated health workers exposed to a probable COVID patient can be waived, while the 10-day isolation period can be shortened to 5 days. All right, for more on the latest developments now in this battle against the pandemic, we're now joined by Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergere. Undersecretary, Happy New Year to you. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming to the show.
Yes, good afternoon, Carmina, and good afternoon to all of you, and Happy New Year to all of you.
How are you doing? I mean, truth be told, this interview was supposed to happen last week, but you were just swamped with meetings. So we just said, you know, whenever you're available, and that day became now. How are things going for the DOH as we speak?
Well, as of now, currently, even from the previous week, we are really swamped with meetings. Of course, we're trying to prepare and intensify our efforts so that we can address the situation. So meetings here and there, and of course, coordinating with our local governments is utmost for us right now.
I want to jump off from what Dr. Jonas Del Rosario was talking about a while ago, as well as one of the leaders of the health workers sector. This whole idea of allowing asymptomatic exposed but asymptomatic healthcare workers to report back to work, how would you sort of assuage the fears of the patients that they won't contract COVID from the health workers themselves if they're allowed to return to work?
Yes, Carmina. No? So the Department of Health will not issue this policy guidance if there is no evidence to support that. The Center for Disease Control of the United States have already implemented that also in the United States, wherein there is evidence really that fully vaccinated individuals, and especially those with boosters, have lower viral load than those unvaccinated and partially vaccinated. So having that as an evidence, we have adopted the CDC guidelines wherein we can be able to shorten the quarantine and isolation of our healthcare workers. This is a decision done so that we can be able to preserve our manpower to serve our citizens in our hospitals. Now, there is this clause in our policy where there is this discretion among our medical center chiefs. If they think that their patients would be most vulnerable, and then they have that option to weigh the risk and the benefits of doing this.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, but you said smaller viral load, but there's still that viral load. Do you think that when you double up on PPEs and all the other protective equipment, that that would sort of make the risks even smaller?
Yes, that is the hope, because we know that for healthcare workers, they are the ones really appropriately and rationally putting on their PPEs. No? So they do their PPEs well, and they fit it so that they cannot contract the virus and they cannot infect other people. So we have that kind of expectation from them that they are really trying to appropriately fit their PPE so that we can prevent further infections.
Undersecretary Vieira, give it to us straight. How bad is it? How bad is the situation out there?
Well, we do not want to say it's bad in terms of bad outcomes. Because right now, we are seeing the decoupling. Although there are a lot of cases right now compared to the cases when we had our Delta experience. But we are looking at milder symptoms compared to Delta. Second, we are seeing that our hospitals are not getting overwhelmed with severe and critical, because a lot of people are vaccinated already. And because, as I've said a while ago, the symptoms for Omicron will be milder than the Delta variant.
But you're talking about the sheer number of people getting infected.
That is what I'm saying, Carmina. If we talk about bad outcomes, we are not seeing that. But we are seeing that there are a lot of people, and that still can overwhelm our healthcare system, especially our primary care services. Like our laboratories right now are getting overwhelmed with the sheer number of people going to laboratories to have themselves tested. That's why we are really harping on this advisory where people, if they feel symptoms, they can immediately isolate even without the test, so that we can just cut transmission in the community.
Which brings us to the next question. The numbers that you post every day, is that the real picture out there? Or is it a fraction of the real picture of infections here in the country?
Well, for now, I can really say honestly that it is just a fraction of what we see among the cases in the country, because we know that a lot of people are already using antigen tests in their homes, in the local governments, and the submission for these antigen test results are incomplete as of now. So we are just seeing the fraction. That's why we are advising people to isolate, to stay at home so that we can stop the transmission.
Yeah. I want to go back to the point that you made about the laboratories really getting overwhelmed. I think you have now a turnaround of 2 to 3 days before you get the results. Hindi na po nangyari yung overnight or even in a matter of hours, 6 to 8 hours, you'll get it. That's not happening anymore. And the real casualty here, Dr. Ferreira, are those who are really in need of these results, because maybe they're immunocompromised. Maybe they need that to check in for further treatments at the hospitals. We're talking about cancer patients in treatment, kidney patients who are in need of transplants. Those are really the ones who are getting affected by this as well, Dr. Ferreira.
Exactly, Carmina. For now, the turnaround time is really long. There are a lot of people who cannot access testing services anymore. So for the general public, our advice would be, even without the test, if you feel symptoms, isolate. If you are an exposed or you are in close contacts, quarantine yourselves. Now, we would want that our direction for policy right now is for us to prioritize for testing those senior citizens and those with comorbidities in our testing services so that we can be able to manage that accordingly. And we will not need to wait for days before they can be admitted to hospitals. Mm-hmm. So I call on everybody, please, if you have mild and asymptomatic conditions, isolate yourself. You can forego testing if there is no access. Please let us try to reserve our resources for our senior citizens and those with comorbidities.
You know for a fact that as we speak, you know, all these labs are dealing with backlogs. So is it a matter of the testing labs or the patient themselves, or do you need a medical clearance to say, you know, I'm a senior citizen, or I'm a person with comorbidity, please prioritize me? I mean, what kind of protocol or necessary rule do you think must be institutionalized just to free up the testing and to really get the results out to those who need it the most?
Actually, Carmina, we have this targeted based testing strategy wherein we have implemented that from the very start, wherein we only test symptomatics and those with exposures. And that is what is covered by the Philippine Health Insurance Corporation as to test. So right now, even those without symptoms, even those without exposures, because they are panicking, they're going to the laboratories to have themselves tested. Mm-mm. So right now, what we need to do would be, it's just like in the vaccinations when we prioritize our A2 and our A3, wherein they have to present their, of course, senior citizens or even. So we are talking to our experts right now if we can do just that so that we can preserve our laboratory capacity. Now, for those who can access because they have the funds, they can line up in other laboratories. But definitely, we are going to target those vulnerable and, of course, those symptomatics and those with exposures.
Yeah, because there's a checklist, right, when you get yourself tested. But sometimes that's already too late because, for example, if it's home servicing, they're already there. And then that's the only time when you fill out the checklist, if you've been exposed and all that, if you have comorbidities. But maybe a screening process can be made first so that the testers can already weed out those who can afford not to get tested to be able to preserve that slot for those who really need to get tested.
Yes, that's the point, Carmina. Actually, right now, the laboratories are requiring that people register first into their electronic systems before they get themselves tested. So that is what is happening right now. I had myself tested the other day and I had to go through this registration process before I had my schedule. So this is happening right now. We just need to be very firm into this direction for policy. We are going to have our meeting with our experts this afternoon, and let's try to see what they will recommend as well so that we can be able to preserve our laboratory capacities.
Let's talk about how much you were able to prepare during the lull. I mean, we were already seeing it happening, Undersecretary, in other countries. They had a lull and then the surge happened. We're following in their footsteps right now. We could have had that opportunity to really prepare. But truth be told, Undersecretary, there are some local government units who said, you know, they were folding up their quarantine operations because there were a few cases. A lot of also, there were also systems that were recalibrated because the numbers were low. What about for the DOH? How much did you get to prepare for this latest surge? You're talking about medical supply, PPEs, and all the other things that go into your pandemic response, Undersecretary.
Yes, Carmina, actually 2 weeks prior to the start of increasing cases, we were able to sit down and coordinate already with the different concerned offices, units of government, and we were able to coordinate already with local governments to prepare. We were able to coordinate with different manufacturers of emergency drugs so that we can prepare also. We have downloaded money to our hospitals so that they can be able to procure the needed drugs and equipment so that we can prepare. We already have given advisory also to all of our hospitals to expand their capacity for beds so that we will not get overwhelmed once the cases increase. So we were able to prepare. But of course, if you look even in other countries, no country can ever be prepared in this kind of situation, especially that cases are trying to double every 2 days. We can see that now it is slowing down. It's the doubling time is 4 days, but the numbers are so huge already, and we have not seen the real picture yet.
Hmm. You know, the other thing that's complicating matters for us, Undersecretary, you have people testing positive. You have people who are contact traced. And then you also have people who are dealing with the after effects of booster shots. And that's really, you know, depleting a lot of workforces, including in hospitals.
Yes, I really am agreeing to you. Our local government workers are really swamped with work. There is vaccination, there is contact tracing, there is monitoring of people doing home quarantine, doing granular lockdowns, and the other things that they need to do. That's why we are asking the help from our citizens also to please cooperate. Let us try to comply with safety protocols. Have yourselves vaccinated if you're eligible already. We need to do this together. It is not for government alone to do this so that we can curb the transmission. It has to be all of us so that we can stop the transmission in the community.
What are your thoughts, Undersecretary, on COVID minimizers, in particular, Omicron variant minimizers? They say it's nothing. They say you're just, it's, you know, minimal effects. You're vaccinated and all that. It shouldn't affect you that much. But they're the vaccinated ones. We still have a lot of people who are unvaccinated, not because they choose to, but because they still can't. Like, you have children and infants. And as I understand, a lot of children are getting sick at this point. So what are your thoughts regarding those who just minimize the effects, at least of this Omicron variant in particular?
Yes, Carmina. First, it is very dangerous that you try to minimize the effects of this Omicron because apparently it is mild. First, I'd just like to inform everybody, Omicron has milder symptoms compared to Delta. If you are vaccinated, you get the additional benefit of having more mild symptoms and eventually you recover. But as you have said, there are a lot of unvaccinated people in the country. There are those who have just had their first doses, so they have not completed their vaccination. So a lot still are vulnerable. Even though the Omicron variant for individuals are presenting with milder symptoms, it can still overwhelm our capacity for our health system because there are still a lot of those unvaccinated and partially vaccinated. So please do not minimize the effects of this Omicron. We need to think not just for ourselves, but for the whole of our population, which is still very vulnerable to this Omicron variant.
Because, you know, when it hits you, even if you're vaccinated, even if you're boosted, you still don't know where it's going to bring you until you survive it.
That's right, Carmina, the uncertainty that you have whenever you have this. But one thing I can tell you, we need to be very, very confident with our vaccines. I have heard of a lot of stories already, have known a lot of individuals who had been vaccinated and boosted and they just had colds. But this is not something that you get complacent with. As I've said, we think of our whole population and not just ourselves.
Right. Let's talk about alert level 4 versus extending the current alert level here, at least in Metro Manila. What is the assessment of the DOH? The current status will expire January 15. Will the DOH be recommending that it be extended further?
Well, right now, Carmina, as what everybody's saying, no? So we have this alert level metrics that we are complying with or we are following. No? So we have this healthcare utilization and the case trends. If you look at the case trends, we really are at critical, especially in NCR. But if you look at our healthcare utilization, it is still below 50%, although we are assuming that with the number of cases that had been being reported, no, every day and the number of admissions increasing, we will have more than 50% utilization in about 4 to 5 days. So with that, the IATF has resolved that we need to study it further so that we can balance economy and health. We need to look at also the number of healthcare workers being affected, and this should be part of what we are determining or measuring when we do our alert level metrics. So for now, it has been agreed on, even with the NCR mayors, that we retain the alert level 3. But of course, we are not saying it's going to, you know, it's going to be permanent. It's going to be evolving. We are closely recovering. And once it hits the thresholds for this healthcare, this alert level.
Talking about evolving, Undersecretary, you know what else is evolving is how people are responding to it. I mean, you hear of a lot of businesses just this weekend voluntarily shutting down their operations, giving their team the time to breathe. You have certain schools, for example, really cognizant of what some families are going through and also shutting down operations for a couple of days. That's what's different this time. I see it. How does the DOH see it?
That's part of the decision, Carmina. When we had our meetings with the mayors and when we had our meeting with the IATF, our Metro Manila mayor showed the streets during the time that we met. It was empty. There was no traffic. It was a Friday. And also, there were reports also, as you have said, that there were certain establishments doing self-regulation. They were closing their operations for 2 to 3 days so that they can be able to disinfect, they can be able to organize well. And, you know, people in our communities are not going out anymore. So that was part of the decision. Since people now are self-regulating, establishments are self-regulating, the IATF and the Metro Manila mayors have requested that we just try to monitor first because we think that the community is already working with us so that we do not need to raise another alert level and have work be suspended again and people will not have anything to eat. So we are closely monitoring, Carmina, but what is good news for all of us, people now are helping government. They are self-regulating so that we'll be able to stop transmission in the community.
I think in the early days of this surge, it was reported that we will be seeing the peak of the numbers at by the end of the month, with how people are responding to it, with how people are self-regulating. Do you see that still as the period wherein we will reach our peak? Or do you see the behavior now really affecting the numbers in the next couple of weeks?
Yes, Carmina, if I just like to clarify, when we do our projections, it is not cast in stone. It will always be affected, no, by behavior of people, by compliance to safety protocols, by vaccination, and the other things. So now that we are seeing people self-regulating, now that we are seeing people complying more to our safety protocols, hopefully that is our prayer, that the peak will not happen by the end of January. It will soon happen fast, and that the cases starts to decline after that peak.
And that is our prayer as well. On that note, we'd like to thank you, Dr. Maria Rosario Vergere, spokesperson of the DOH. Thanks again for joining us. Take care and keep safe. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to take a break now. Up ahead, we'll tackle the effect of the COMELEC new policy on social media propaganda when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. And we're back here still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippine government sees no need to raise the COVID alert level in Metro Manila for now. Partial lockdowns and massive testing in the Chinese city of Tianjin following the detection of local Omicron cases. And the COMELEC decision on the Ferdinand Marcos Jr. disqualification cases could come out next week. Back with more news. The Philippine Election Commission aiming to release its decision on the disqualification cases against presidential frontrunner Ferdinand Marcos Jr. by next week. That's as the printing of ballots is set to begin on January 15. COMELEC spokesman James Jimenez says, should there still be changes in the list of candidates because of possible disqualification, the vote of that candidate will simply not be counted.
Just yesterday, I think, si Commissioner Guanzon came out with a timetable for the cases that are in the first division. Ayon sa kanya, ang target niya is January 17 because these cases have already been submitted for resolution. No? Ibig sabihin, wala nang kailangan gawin yung parties, wala nang hinihintay pa na, ano, na submission.
The COMELEC does not see the pandemic derailing the elections. Jimenez says as long as there are electoral boards, the votes will push through. Meanwhile, the Marcos camp addresses the controversy over his absence from the COMELEC's preliminary conference on the disqualification cases last Friday. That's after video of Marcos guesting on a radio show the day before surfaced, even though that was when he supposedly started feeling sick based on his certificate. Or his medical certificate. His spokesperson, Vic Rodriguez, explains Marcos had two interviews that day, one in the morning and then in the afternoon. He was advised to rest after the first one due to a fever and swollen throat. Marcos, however, went on to do the afternoon interview, which supposedly exacerbated his condition. Rodriguez claims Marcos's condition worsened further by Friday morning, which prompted him to skip the COMELEC conference. Two persons arrested in Navotas and Caloocan for violating the COMELEC gun ban. The ban went into effect Sunday, marking the start of the election period. Under the resolution, the Philippine National Police suspends all permits to carry firearms except for members of the PNP, armed forces, and other law enforcement agencies on duty. The ban will last until June 8th. Well, last week, the COMELEC issued a new rule on internet, mobile, and social media propaganda. The poll body is now requiring candidates and parties to register all their social media accounts and sites. How will this affect the game plan of this year's aspirants? Veteran campaign strategist Alan Herman now joins us for a discussion on this. Herman is also president of Agents International, Inc. Alan, nice to see you again. Happy New Year to you.
Hi, Carmina. Always a pleasure to be here. Happy New Year, and I hope everybody's staying safe.
Yeah, we hope so, too, on your part. Now, this new rule, how much of a game changer do you think it will be?
In truth, a very anticlimactic answer and a very short one. It won't be a game changer at all. It's really much ado about nothing. This whole verified accounts ruling of the COMELEC 10748, resolution number 10748, really won't affect the campaign in any measurable or significant form.
Yeah, and why do you say so? Because, you know, of course they can just register. Of course they have, you know, certain sanctions for violations. But what's to prevent, for example, a supporter or another group allied with the campaign, but not necessarily part of it, to come out with their own propaganda for their chosen candidate, Alan?
Exactly that. There is nothing preventing them, and it is impossible to police. I don't think there is any regulatory agency, I wouldn't even say qualified, but has the capacity to police a universe as large as social media. And you know, I think the root of this whole discussion came about, and I'm not pointing fingers or saying he's the rabble rouser or anything, but you know, it was Attorney Emil Maranyan who made a tweet, and he said that only platform verified accounts, SOCMED accounts can be used for the campaign. I think that was his exact term, right? Which Attorney James Jimenez of the COMELEC has since clarified. And you know, to a social media strategist or a campaign strategist like myself, it's misleading to say that only platform verified accounts can be used for the campaign. No, any account can be used for the campaign, but only platform verified accounts can be used to advertise and to boost. Now that I believe is fair. It's been called unconstitutional. It's been called anti-poor. But if you really get down to the nuts and bolts of the resolution, personally, I believe it's absolutely not unconstitutional and absolutely not anti-poor either.
Because you have to really think about what is the goal. What do you want to achieve by making that a resolution, by coming out with that resolution? Is it to make sure that, you know, people are really well informed, or, you know, because you don't, as you said, if it's a whole universe, I mean, how do you even, where do you even begin, Alan?
Right, precisely. I think talking back to your question, what was the goal? I believe that the intention really, and I don't mean to speak for Attorney James, but I think really the intention is accountability and ultimately to prevent disinformation. There's this thing called spoof accounts.
Yeah.
So for example, tracking back to our first point, sorry, I'm being very Nolan-esque about the way I'm unraveling this narrative, but you know, tracking back to our very first point, yes, nothing is stopping, for example, Carmina Constantino fans to make 10,000 pages about you. There's absolutely nothing stopping them from doing that. But some can be malicious. Some can claim that you said something that you didn't. Some can splice your videos or Photoshop you into situations that you were not really in, for example. So a verified account can take care of that. A verified account can actually issue statements against such misinformation. And ultimately, there's accountability. In the same way, nobody really made a big deal about the COMELEC regulating poster sizes, for example, or where you can put your placards, or where you can put your streamers. That's just regulation. If you take out an ad on TV, you need to have a verified and a registered advertising agency to do it. So it's the same thing. If you take out a billboard, an out-of-home ad, you need to register with the Advertising Standards Committee in order for your material to be put out. So the same rules should apply to social media in terms of boosting and advertising your content, just to make sure that, number one, if you say something that is hateful or you in your ad, I'm not saying it will happen, the likelihood is very small, but if you spread this information in your ad, for example, at least you can be held accountable for it and not hide under the veil of, oh, it was a fan site, oh, it was an anonymous person who made this video, et cetera, et cetera.
But you know what's going to happen, right? They're not going to boost that. But
absolutely.
They're not going to boost that, but they're still going to, you know, allow these fan sites or other pages to do the same.
Which is exactly, why I said it will not significantly affect the behavior of online campaigning. So what you're doing is you're just regulating / adding legitimacy, putting legitimacy to a main source site, an official site. But you're absolutely not doing anything to curb parallel efforts, as they say. Even likes and shares, you can have your troll army do that. You don't really need to advertise, or you don't really need to boost a post in order for it to go viral nowadays. That's the sad reality.
So it really, at the end of the day, it's going to be a decision that a voter would have to make. Is he going to be vulnerable to the, you know, disinformation? And is he going to believe that? Or is he, you know, going to make an informed choice?
That is the reality. Of course, if you want to talk about informed choices, an informed choice and the truth, to add a very romanticized term to it, right? The truth in its essence, only really matters if the person seeks that truth. And I suppose the thinking of the COMELEC is that a verified account can at least be a tool for a voter, for example. And it's happened to me, by the way, to some of my clients over the holidays. A lot of this information was spread out over some of my local government clients, wherein they were giving away money or sites that, you know, spoof sites that really look authentic were saying that, oh, walk-in testing at this facility. Awful, right? So at least our verified account can actually issue a statement condemning this and saying this is absolutely not true. So I can only see good things coming from a verified account. I certainly don't see it being unconstitutional or anti-poor.
Okay, let's set that aside. And I want to, because I want to talk about the current standing of the presidential candidates at this point. How are things going for them? As a campaign strategist, who do you think is gaining more ground? I guess more importantly, what happened last week with presidential frontrunner Ferdinand Marcos Jr., do you think that's going to affect his numbers, considering that people now are once again talking about how allegedly dishonest he was, bringing out that interview and also the medical certificate of Marcos Jr.? What do you think about that, Alan?
Well, obviously, if you take the most credible surveys, at least you slice that pie and try to sieve it through the credible survey firms. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is ahead in most of these surveys, but you know, the thing to look at also is that these surveys are saying that VP Lenny's trajectory is fast catching up. So the analogy there, it may be a poor analogy, I hope it's clear though, is that if it's a race, Marcos Jr. is ahead, he's traveling at 65 kilometers per hour, VP Lenny is behind, but she's traveling at 100 kilometers per hour. So if you're a VP Lenny supporter, your hope and your prayer at least is that eventually by May, the trajectory will continue. If Marcos Jr. will slow down, we don't know. At least the catch-up will be faster and the overtake will eventually happen. That's the hope if you're a VP Lenny supporter. Mm-hmm. So there's two things at play here right now, which is standing and trajectory. So VP Lenny's trajectory among all the candidates is the highest. However, Marcos Jr. remains to be the front leader. Now, we all know what happened with this whole Zoomicron fiasco, Zoomicron Gate, as it's being termed online, right? You know, if I was the campaign strategist of the opposition, I would really, really, leverage on this, because at this stage in the campaign, especially now that face-to-face or mask-to-mask muscle flexing traditional activities like motorcades and rallies have again been shelved. We're back to, you know, the online realm. Yeah. Once again, we are back to the online realm. If I was the opponent of, if I were the other presidential candidates against Marcos Jr., I would leverage greatly on this, because now is the time to start eating soft boats, what you call soft boats.
Before we run out of time, I want to talk about the other candidates as well. We just showed a clip of Manila Mayor Iscoa Moreno there and also Senator Ping Lacson. We got to talk about Manny Pacquiao as well. I mean, what is happening to their campaigns? What's going on with Manila Mayor Iscoa Moreno, for example? Lots of people saying he's losing steam. What do you think?
Well, he will definitely get a shot in the arm if this ESA thing takes off. I don't know if you've seen ESA, but there's a lot of talk and rumblings about this Magkaisa ISSA, which is Isko Sara. It's being floated around that PRRD, President Duterte, will in fact endorse him. So that's being floated around. If that happens, then definitely that campaign will gain a lot of steam. He's come out with new ad material lately. So the thing about Mayor Isko is they are, I believe, I'm obviously not part of that campaign team, but if you look at it mathematically, they are holding on to their position that Mayor Isko is everybody's second choice. Now, if you analyze that statement, there is a lot of truth in that. If you ask the diehard supporters of the other candidates who their second choice is, it will predominantly always be Mayor Isko. Mm-hmm. So what they're trying to do right now, I mean, or at least what I would try to do if I was on that team, is to really convert the soft votes into the second choice votes. So that's what's happening to that campaign. Now, as far as Senator Ping is concerned, he's been doing his press rounds. He's been condemning activities that he feels that his other rival candidates have been doing or not been doing. Senator Manny, I have not heard much from him. The thing is, I think that campaign really needs to repivot because they were greatly leveraged on gatherings, on interactions wherein he would appear before the public and make a speech and give things away, right? Give stuff away, essentially.
But that's been choked because of the pandemic.
Exactly. So perhaps they need to repivot and really study what their above the line and below the line communications, integrated marketing communications.
I want to go back to the idea that you brought up a while ago, a possibility of Manila Mayor Isko Moreno and Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte joining forces. That is at play. What would make sense now? What would make more sense for the HQ of Vice President Lenny Robredo? Should she go for Manny? Should she go for Senator Ping? But then where does that leave Senator Tito Soto, who's also enjoying good numbers?
When you say go for, do you mean should she adopt them or should she...
Yeah, if talks of unifying, if that's still at play, is that something that the vice president and the other contenders should also look to?
Well, the last time I guessed it on your show, unfortunately, I absolutely swung and missed because I did make the prediction that Mayor Inday would go for the presidency. And we all know what happened there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I will make a similar prediction now and let's see if I'll swing and miss. At this point, I don't think there will be any breakups in the VP Lenny Senator Kiko coalition, because I think it would be terribly off-brand. And if she did go for another vice presidential candidate, it would be terribly off-brand, because from the start, her campaign has always been, I'm not about opportunistic politics. I'm not about choosing the convenient choice, but the best choice.
But she would also be saying that she's still, she's for unity, right? That
yes.
she's all about consolidating the opposition.
Consolidation is the perfect word. I think she's more of everybody bandying together against a common opponent, not necessarily splitting up the tandems and having a mixed match. But again, last time I guessed it, I swung big and I missed big. So who knows?
You know, if I didn't know you, I would say that, you know, you might just be throwing out a strategy there without, you know, like a strategic point there that you're just saying, hopeful that message would stick. I don't know who your intended recipient is, but I don't know, because it's you, Alan, that I'm talking to. Maybe you're just saying maybe you'll miss, but you're actually saying that you won't. I don't know. You're a strategist.
It's a curious profession I'm in, indeed. And well, you know, at the end of the day, we just hope that the elections will truly reflect the will of the people, and that they're peaceful and orderly, and that there will be an election, right? Because there's also talk that there might not be.
Yeah, well, the COMELEC said the vote will push through, and we're going to have to trust the COMELEC on that. We've run out of time, Alan, but thank you again for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Till the next prediction, maybe, in a few months' time. By the way, last question. Everybody's saying at this point it's too early. You know, wherever they stand at this point, it's too early. But tell us, when should they stick to this line until it's really too late for them?
In terms of the numbers and catching up? I would say March would be, second week of March would be a good indicator. That's already statistically weighty enough to have we call it an econometric line. Sorry for the term, but yeah, an OLS line.
All right. Thanks again, Alan Herman there, veteran campaign strategist joining us on the program. Appreciate it. Happy New Year to you. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Everybody keep safe. Mabuhay po ang Pilipinas. Thanks.
Take care. We're going to take a break now. Still ahead, a Chinese city reimposes strict COVID protocols after confirming two local cases of the Omicron variant. Stay with us. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. World News, two confirmed community cases of the Omicron variant triggering widespread testing and partial lockdowns in the northern Chinese city of Tianjin. A total of 14 million people across 16 districts will now be tested in a span of 2 days. Residents will only be given the green health code necessary to travel once they receive a negative result. The Tianjin outbreak poses risks to the capital, Beijing, and the upcoming Winter Olympics because of the large number of commuters working and living in the two cities. In business, Citigroup will be the first major Wall Street bank that will terminate unvaccinated employees. In a memo to its U.S. workers, the bank said employees must present a proof of vaccination by January 14th. Those who have not complied by next week will be put on unpaid leave and fired on January 31st. But Citi says it will assess exemptions on religious or medical grounds. In sports, it was Clay Day in the NBA today as the Golden State Warriors welcomed back their sharpshooter, Klay Thompson. The All-Star wingman made his return to the NBA after 2 years of recovering from ACL and Achilles injuries. Thompson played 20 minutes in his season debut against the Cleveland Cavaliers, finishing with 17 points in Golden State's 96-82 victory. The Warriors' other splash bro, Steph Curry, finished with 28 points. The Warriors are tied with the Phoenix Suns for the best record in the league at 13 wins. Make that 30 wins, 3-0, and 9 losses. The Premier Volleyball League planning to hold 3 conferences in its second season as a professional outfit. The Open Conference is tentatively set to open on February 16 with at least 10 teams participating. The league's organizers are looking at either the Paco Arena Events and Sports Center in Manila or Royal Tagaytay as their venue for their bubble setup. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. That'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it to you on the news channel.